Hari.
Thank you.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana. Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Cheva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Dudirayet. Nashtabrayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttamashloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for being here this morning. Today's verse is Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text 27. Yasya Navadya Charitam Manishino. Yasya Navadya Charitam Nami Manishino. Gran Grinantya Vidya Patalam Bibitsava. Grinantya Vidya Patalam Bibitsava. Nirasta Samyati Shayopi Yatsvayam. Nirasta samyati shayopi yat svayam. Pishacha charyam acharad gati satam. Pishacha charyam acharad gati satam. Anyone like to chant this verse before the students do? Yasya navadya charitam manishino Grinanta vidya patalam bibitsava. Students? Sya dyam charitam manishino. Nirasta samyati shayopi yat svayam. Pishacha charyam acharad gati satam. Yasya navadya charitam manishino. Grinantya vidya patalam bibitsava. Nirasta samyati shayopi yat svayam. Yasya, whose, anavadya, unimpeachable, acharitam, character, manishina, great sages, grinanti, follow, avidya, nescience, patalam, mass, bibitsava, desiring to dismantle, nirasta, nullified, samya, equality, atishaya, greatness, api, in spite of, yat, as, svayam, personally, pishacha, devil, charyam, activities, acharat, performed, gati, destination, satam, of the devotees. Translation. Although no one in the material world is equal to or greater than Lord Shiva, and although his unimpeachable character is followed by great souls to dismantle the mass of nescience, he nevertheless remains as if a devil to give salvation to all the devotees of the Lord. Purport. Lord Shiva's uncivilized, devilish characteristics are never abominable because he teaches the sincere devotees of the Lord how to practice detachment from the material world. He is called Mahadeva, or the greatest of all demigods, and no one is equal to or greater than him in the material world. He is almost equal with Lord Vishnu, although he always associates with Maya, Durga. He is above the reactionary stage of the three modes of material nature, and although he is in charge of devilish characters in the mode of ignorance, he is not affected by such association. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Desha Tarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So I want to pose a question, not for you to answer or raise your hand and answer, but just to think about maybe this is something that often comes up for people, is they may feel that they are perhaps too different to fit the mold of a Hare Krishna devotee. They may feel what I come to the temple and what I see is it's so different from me, or I have such a different nature or different personality. Do I really fit into this? Can I really be a Hare Krishna, considering perhaps I have this kind of personality or this kind of conditioning, and I may not seem to fit in, whatever that mold in their head might seem like? And if you perhaps feel this way, or if you perhaps know somebody that feels this way, I want you to also think about, what if the greatest devotee also did not fit the mold? What if the greatest devotee also did not seem externally to fit the mold of a devotee at all? Just by appearance, you would see this greatest devotee and think, there's no way they are a devotee of Lord Krishna, just by their appearance. What if I told you that greatest devotee wore ashes in his hair and his body, a necklace of skulls, a snake around his neck, his skin was reddish, he had a trident? If you didn't know who Lord Shiva is, and I told you this, you would probably not believe me. And he associates with spirits and hobgoblins and so many ghostly type of things. Perhaps you might think that this is unbelievable. There's no way that somebody who looks like this could actually be the greatest devotee. But actually, the book Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes all kinds of devotees, all kinds of amazing great devotees, at the very end, says Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. It declares in this verse several things. Lord Achyuta is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna, the infallible ones, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Ganga is the purest of all rivers. The Bhagavatam is the essence of all scriptures. And Lord Shiva is the greatest of all devotees. After speaking about so many devotees who act in so many, looks so many different shapes and forms and come in all sizes, Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee. And the same Lord Shiva is glorified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is glorified by Sri Krishna. His name is being chanted by Lord Ramachandra. This is the amazing Lord Shiva. Yet, he's so mysterious and perhaps difficult to understand because of his appearance and because of his activities, because of the service he does. And it's very important to start to dig past this a little bit. Who really is Lord Shiva? What is the heart of Lord Shiva? And how do we understand him as Vaishnavas? And why is he misunderstood so much? So here in this verse, Kashyapa is stating that there's no one in the material world greater to Lord Shiva or equal to Lord Shiva. His character is unimpeachable. Anavadya, unimpeachable. Have you heard this term impeach before? The president gets impeached. It usually means they do something which is bad, essentially. It's out of character. It's not of a character of the position they're in. It breaks the rules. And therefore, They have to get scrutinized for it, impeached. His character, Lord Shiva, is unimpeachable. There's no flaw in his character. Yet, at the same time, since he remains as if a devil to give salvation to all the devotees of the Lord. What does that mean? He remains in this appearance that if you did not know him, it might look very scary to give salvation to everybody. So here Kashyapa is saying, this actually, he's so great, he's the greatest, but you wouldn't know unless you really dug a little bit deeper. So that's what we want to do today. We want to dig a little bit deeper and get to learn about Lord Shiva and the very important lesson in this study of such a great personality. So the simplest way to describe a very complex subject matter of Lord Shiva's tattva, Srila Prabhupada would give this example often, and it really summarizes a very complicated subject in one analogy. He goes, Shiva tattva is like yogurt and milk. If you have ever seen anyone made yogurt before, yogurt will come from the milk, and you can make yogurt from milk. But from yogurt, you can't go backwards and make milk. If you blend yogurt, it becomes thin yogurt. It doesn't become milk. So the same way, he's almost like Vishnu. He comes from Vishnu, but he's not Vishnu, and he's not a general living entity. He has his own category. So he's like yogurt if Krishna is like milk. He can come from Krishna and the same, very similar qualities from the same essence, but you can't go the other way around. The property is not going both ways. And why is Lord Shiva like this? Why is he dressed in a devilish manner? Why does he look so estranged? And it really has to do with his nature and the services he was given. There is a wonderful conversation between Narad Muni and Lord Shiva, when Narad Muni is in search for the greatest Vaishnava and the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. At one point, he goes to Lord Shiva, and he says, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu, Bhagavatam states, Lord Shiva, you're the greatest devotee. And Lord Shiva was very embarrassed and a little bit upset. And he said, why do you think I'm the greatest devotee? Why do you think that? And he starts explaining why, what he does. And it gives a very good clue of why he is the way he is. And he goes, I'm asked to do these thankless tasks that no one seems to appreciate. I have to be in charge of the destruction of the whole universe. I have to be the predominating deity of the mode of ignorance. Therefore, all the people in the mode of ignorance, they follow me. My entourage is not the kind of people I want to keep, but they come to me and take shelter because I've been given this task to give shelter of those in the mode of ignorance. I've been given the task to preach Mayavad philosophy, which seems so contradictory. But this is what the Lord asked me to do because he said, no one else could do it. You have to do this. And he goes, I'm taking people away from Krishna, seemingly, by doing this very thankless service. How can you say I'm the greatest devotee? But Narad Muni said, no, because you have these services, you're so exalted. Actually, even though they're so estranged and they're so difficult and challenging to do, and they're so easily misunderstood, because you do these things, actually, Krishna has seen that no one has the ability to take on such a challenging service. And so Lord Shiva continued, he said, there's so many boons, I've given so many benedictions to the enemies. So many people, they come to me who want to kill Krishna. And what can I do? They take shelter of me, so I give them shelter. Again, I'm giving shelter to those in the mode of ignorance. Here it says, avidya patalam. He is the mat, he's bearing the load of those in avidya. He's giving shelter to those in avidya, those in ignorance. They come to Lord Shiva, and they say all kinds of things, how they want to kill Krishna and become the Supreme. And he has no choice. They come to me, I have to give him this shelter. And there we go. Another reason why I'm not the greatest. I'm going against the Lord. And Narad Muni says, no, this is part of your wonderful, intimate relationship with Krishna. Actually, this just enhances his pastimes like anything. And you always leave a little loophole in these boons that allows Krishna to come in and save the day in a very beautiful way. So that's Lord Shiva, and perhaps why he, because of his service, why he appears the way he does. And Lord Shiva is also extremely, extremely compassionate. is one of the saviors of the world in one way you could say. But there was a big battle between the demons and demigods, and they were in search of this nectar, that when he churned the milk ocean, this nectar was said to come out, and this nectar would give immortality, great power. And so the demons wanted to overthrow the heavenly planets and the demigods, and the demigods wanted to defend their position, and this great battle ensued. And Narayan said, okay, you take this Mandara mountain, and then you take Suki the snake, and you churn and churn and churn, and eventually this nectar will come out. But do you know what came out first before the nectar? What came out? Poison. Poison came out. And not just any poison, not just a little bit of poison. It was so strong that this poison could destroy the whole universe. And what to do with it? If you take the poison and you put it back in the water, then all the water's contaminated, and you die that way. If you try to put it in the ground, then all the ground's contaminated. You know, there's nothing you could do. So they went to Lord Vishnu, what should we do? There's this poison. And he said, don't ask me, ask the most compassionate one, Lord Shiva. He'll know what to do. And Lord Shiva immediately just said, I'll drink it. And I said, what do you mean you'll drink it? You'll die. And he goes, well, it's for the sake of the devotees. I'll drink it. And so he took all the poison in his hand, and he cupped it, and he swallowed it. And it said that Parvati put her thumb right here in his throat so that it wouldn't go all the way down. And he didn't want it to keep going down and keep in the lower regions. So he said, oh, my Lord is in my heart. So if it goes down past my heart region, it will hurt my Lord. It will affect my Lord. So he kept it here in his throat. And do you know what he's referred to because of that? You don't know? Anybody know his name because Purushottam? You have an idea? Nilakanta. It's a bluish or Kalakanta, blackish throat. And he's celebrated because of this extreme act of kindness. So this is Lord Shiva. This was what makes him so great. And I think it's very important to understand Lord Shiva from this Vaishnava perspective, that if we just see him as black and white, if we just see him at face value, what we see, it's very easy to misunderstand him. And that's a big problem for two reasons. If we judge a book by its cover, if we judge a devotee based off what we see, ultimately a few things can happen. Usually criticism can happen, which means an offense, which is really the last thing any devotee wants. But before I even speak about that, when you judge a devotee based on face value, based on what you see, the externals, actually you miss out on their mercy. You miss out on their mercy, you miss out on getting to understand who this devotee really is. Like, for example, if I were to go around the room and see all the devotees here and think of them just in terms of their occupation, I say, Vishwambar Prabhu, okay, he's a principal, okay, accountant, okay, teacher, okay, and then that's all I know all the devotees by. How deep is my sangha? How deep is my relationships? Because occupation for a devotee is just part of the picture. In fact, if I were to go a little deeper and ask Vishwambar Prabhu, why is it you do what you do? I would see that him being a principal of the school is actually part of the bigger picture of him wanting to. That's the way he worships Krishna. That's the way he serves a spiritual master. This is part of the bigger picture. The bigger picture of a devotee is not what you see at face value, but what's in their heart. The bigger picture of what you see is the bhakti in their heart and their devotional sentiment and attachment to the Lord and how they're trying to serve. So you'll really miss out on not understanding the greatest of all devotees, Lord Shiva, if we don't understand his heart and we only see him according to what his occupation is, what his job is, what he does in terms of the material universe, destruction, being shelter for the ignorance, for those in the mode of ignorance. But if we start to understand his heart a little more, start to understand what is the pure bhakti in his heart, then we'll really gain so much from him, so much shelter. The devotees of the Lord, they're striving, their heart is striving for bhakti. Their heart is striving to reestablish their covered relationship with the Lord, covered by ignorance, covered by the modes of material nature. And Srila Rupa Goswami defines pure bhakti very, very nicely. And I think it's very important to understand this in order to realize what criticizing or judging a devotee, the repercussions of it is. So pure bhakti is described as anyabhilashita shunyam. So that's one aspect, that there is no other desire. The intention is just to please Krishna. There's no other desire for anything material, for name, fame, adoration. It's jnana karma dhyanavritam. It's just bhakti. There's no desire for karma. There's no desire for jnana. There's none of these aspects to it. And then most importantly is anukulena krishna nushilanam, which means that it's constantly with the favorable intention to serve Krishna. That this devotees are striving for devotional service which is meant to please the Lord, and they're striving to do that 24/7, constantly. And this is pure bhakti. So this is what us devotees are striving towards, and this is what Lord Shiva has in his heart. Mahaprabhu would use this example of a creeper, of a garden. And if you're anybody here ever gardened before or planted anything? Okay, a few of you. When you plant a seed and you're watering it and taking care of it, what happens after a little bit of time? What happens? Yeah. Starts to sprout. And how big is that sprout usually in the beginning? Really, really small, right? What happens if you leave that plant outside when it freezes? It dies. So you have to be really careful. You have to really take care of the small little creeper again and again and again. And this is us watering our devotional creeper, so to say. This is us reaching out to Krishna and watering this plant again and again through devotional service. It grows. But we have to be so careful, because if you have this plant around the wrong kind of plants or on different bugs or animals, then they start to eat it. So in the same way, our bhakti creeper, we have to be careful with different material desires, desire for name, fame, adoration, lust, greed, so many things, violence. And when we protect it this way, then it can grow very nicely. But it's the one thing that can destroy this endeavor for our bhakti to blossom is actually offending a Vaishnava. And offending a Vaishnava and criticizing a Vaishnava starts with judgment. It starts with seeing somebody at face value, just what you see, and that's all. And not getting to understand them a little better and making a judgment based off what you see and what you think is correct and not correct. And because of that, it's like a mad elephant that can come with this trample over the garden. And one moment, everything you've worked for can just be finished, all this devotional endeavor, because that's how important devotees are. And you'll see in the Bhagavatam, other scriptures like Chaitanya Charitamrita, often the great devotees are very difficult to understand. It's as common. Like Lord Nityananda, he's known as Avadhut. He's very difficult to understand. He acts like a madman. He dresses very interesting. He has all kinds of interesting jewelry. But he's this amazing, greatest devotees. How do you understand that? And if we just start seeing everybody at face value, then we'll constantly be making offenses and we won't really have deep sangha. But if we, instead of judgment, think about curiosity. Okay, maybe I'm not understanding why this person is dressed the way they do, act the way they do. But instead of judging, if you approach with curiosity, just like Lord Shiva, if you judge him for who he is, you really won't understand how he's the greatest devotee. You'd miss out so much. But if you're able to be a little bit curious, there's so much information out there to really understand who he is. And actually, judgment is something that is learned. Curiosity is natural. Thank you very much for staying. Hare Krishna. Curiosity is natural. If you think about it, it's very natural for a child to be curious. It's very natural for a child to want to know how things work, want to know how the world works. But it's usually the judgment of deciding what's correct, what's right, what's wrong, that's a learned aspect from their society, from their parents, their school, their culture. And so to judge is based on our conditioning, actually. But to be curious is a natural element of our soul. So this is just a topic I really wanted to churn more and more, because it happens so much that we prevent ourselves from making advancement because we judge unnecessarily and we don't take the time to be a little curious and understand devotees a little bit better. So then, what is the heart of Lord Shiva? If we're speaking about this is his service, this is what he looks like, but what really is his heart? And how to understand him? And understanding Lord Shiva really has to be done through Shastra, right? And if you cannot imitate the activities of Lord Shiva, just like you cannot imitate the activities of Lord Nityananda, but if you follow in his footsteps and see where are his footsteps going, then you would be able to learn so much from Lord Shiva and understand his heart. And the footsteps of Lord Shiva are pointed in one direction, and that's Goloka Vrindavan. Lord Shiva is chanting the names of Radha and Krishna and desiring to be a gopi serving in the Rasa Leela. This is the footsteps of Lord Shiva. This is the direction he's going. And this is why, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is so, so important, because we have the same goal. We want the same exact thing. And here's someone so great that has it, so of course we should follow in his footsteps. Lord Shiva has composed the most beautiful song, really, the prayers to Srimati Radharani. And he chants this 18-verse prayer, and he shares it with Parvati, his wife. And every verse he's pleading Radharani again and again, when will I get your sidelong glance of mercy? When will I get your sidelong glance of mercy? And once Lord Shiva, so desirous to serve Srimati Radharani, to serve Radha and Krishna, decided that I want to be participating in the Rasa Leela. So he arrived in Vrindavan, and he goes to the Rasa Mandap, or he comes out through the Yamuna, actually, and he's desiring to go to the Rasa Mandap, and Vrindadevi stops him. And Vrindadevi says, "Oh, where are you going? Lord Shiva, why are you here?" And he says, I want to participate in the Rasa Leela. I want to serve Radha and Krishna in the Rasa Leela. And she goes, "Oh, well, you have to be a gopi to do that. You can't go in this form. You're going to scare everybody. So go across the Jamuna, and there's a beautiful sarovar known as Mansarovar, which is created from the tears of separation of Srimati Radharani. And if you take bath in this sarovar, in this lake, you'll come out the form as a gopi." And so he did, and he came out as a form of a gopi, and he was known as Gopishvara. And so Mahadev came back, he entered the Ras Mandap, and the gopis saw, oh, there's a new gopi here. And they're very curious. They're also a little protective, you know, is this a demon in disguise? But they wanted to know, who is this gopi? So they approached Gopishvara, "Oh, where do you come from?" And he almost said, "Kailash," but then he thought, which village do you come from? Didn't say anything. "Who are your parents?" "What is your name? Why are you here?" And then they started to feel a little bit like something's going on. This is not right, and become a little protective. At that moment, Lord Shiva, who is for many fear personified, who is the destroyer of the universe, who is so powerful, felt so small in front of the gopis. He felt so minute. Lord Shiva, who is described as the greatest of devotees in Bhagavatam, felt so humbled in front of the greatest gopis. And so Krishna saw the whole scene, and out of compassion, he said, "Lord Shiva, thank you very much for wanting to serve. I can see your desire for wanting to serve this Rasa Leela and serve us, the divine couple, in this way. But I think the best service for you would be to guard the Rasa Leela and guard it for anybody who has ill intentions to come. And in fact, become the guardian of Sri Vrindavan Dham. Those who want to enter Vrindavan Dham must seek your blessings. And only through your blessings they'll be able to really come to the real Vrindavan and really be able to experience Vrindavan Dham for how it is." And so this is Lord Shiva's position. And it's very important. And this is really Lord Shiva's inner desire, is Sri Vrindavan Dham, is the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And because this is also our desire, it's so important to understand Lord Shiva in this light, in this regard, and approach him this way. Because there's a lot we have in common, actually, even though it may not seem like it. I'm just trying to find this very nice statement of Srila Prabhupada's, one moment. Yes, here in the purport. It says, "Lord Shiva's uncivilized, devilish characteristics are never abominable because he teaches the sincere devotees of the Lord how to practice detachment from material enjoyment." And since his duty in Vrindavan is to prohibit anybody who has this enjoying spirit, this Purusha Abhiman, this spirit of essentially of wanting to be in the position of Purusha, of the controller. Therefore, he filters out those who really are free from this detachment. And it shows that this detachment from wanting to be the enjoyer, this detachment from enjoying for our own sake and having an attachment for enjoying for Krishna's sake, is really the difference of being able to enter Vrindavan and not being able to enter Vrindavan. And if we actually want to enter Vrindavan and reach this goal, Lord Shiva is the person to pray to. Lord Shiva is the person to seek a relationship with, because this is his service. I thought I could end with one little story I found describing Lord Shiva and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially since tomorrow is the appearance day of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And since today's verse is about Lord Shiva, I can kind of bring both together. Lord Shiva, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was traveling through the city of Bhuvaneshwar. I don't know if anyone here has been to the city of Bhuvaneshwar. It's just outside of Jagannath Puri. And there is a beautiful temple of Lord Shiva there. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had stopped at this temple, and when he entered, he bowed down and it fell flat like a stick, offered his full dandavats to Lord Shiva, and he offered a beautiful set of 8 prayers that he composed called the Shivashtakam. And it's actually quite beautiful, where he glorifies Lord Shiva in 8 prayers. And it's so amazing to see, because we know that the Lord loves to glorify his devotees. And we see how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has glorified Lord Shiva, and he sheds light onto Lord Shiva's position for the Vaishnavas, for followers of Lord Chaitanya, and how our relationship with Lord Shiva is very important. So I won't read all of the verses, but I did want to share one of them, which I thought was so nice. He goes, "Oh, Sri Rama, O Govinda, O Mukunda, O Shori, O Sri Krishna, O Narayan, O Vasudeva." This is Mahaprabhu speaking. "I offer my obeisances unto you, Sri Shiva, who are the monarch ruling over the bee-like devotees who are mad to drink the nectar of these and other innumerable names of Hari. and who thus destroys all grief. I offer my obeisances unto you, who bestow happiness to your servitors, as you pour upon them the liquid nectar flowing from your reddish lotus feet, upon which charming ankle bells ring. Obeisances unto you, who are adorned by an abundance of gems. Please endow me today with pure love of Sri Hari. And it's Srimurari Gupta states, if one recites with devotion this glorification of a transcendental potency, Lord Tripurari, as composed by the lotus-eyed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can obtain here and now the eternally relishable pure love for Krishna, which is very rarely achieved even by the host of sages and demigods. And then shortly following that kirtan, Lord Chaitanya was taking prasadam and he was thinking, oh, it would be so nice if I had the maha prasadam from Lord Shiva's food remnants from his plate. And just at that moment, one brahmana came and he offered him the maha prasad, and Lord Chaitanya was just in ecstasy. And all devotees came together and they took the maha prasad of Lord Shiva. And Damodar Pandit saw this and he made a comment and he said, oh, this is so strange. Why has the Lord taken the food remnants of Lord Shiva? This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it said that if one shouldn't eat the remnants of Lord Shiva because Bhrigu Muni has placed a curse on those who worship him. So why the all-knowing Lord, he knows this, why did he still take it? And Murari Gupta, he replied, he goes, actually, Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, if you think they have a separate intention, then it's an offense. But if you understand that their intention is one, that they both want to see the living entity come to Krishna, then it's not an offense. Then actually this Mahaprasadam is a great blessing. And he goes on to say that wherever the eternal lingam of Sri Shiva is worshipped with great respect by Vaishnavas, in order to develop love for Sri Krishna, there will be no doubt about accepting the remnants of Sri Shiva's food. O Vipra, such devotional service is very auspicious for all embodied beings. So it's so wonderful to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu respects Lord Shiva and adores him and shows us through his footsteps, through his activities, how we all should also respect Lord Shiva and see him as a Vaishnava, because if we just misjudge his character based off what we see at face value, or see things black and white, as perhaps many see Lord Shiva, then we really miss out on such an opportunity to come closer to our own goal, which is the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any questions and comments?
Do you know anything about the curse that Bhrigu Muni placed on Lord Shiva?
I know the pastime, but I don't remember the details. It's been a little while since I've read it. Perhaps somebody else may know.
Does anybody?
Yeah, I assume it comes from the pastime when Bhrigu Muni is going to Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, and he's testing each of them to see who's supreme. And the only one who responded in the very positive, loving way to his, you know, either his anger, physical harm, was Lord Vishnu. And so perhaps it was in that exchange. I think it's at the end of a 10th canto, the pastime is there.
Regarding offenses toward the external view that we have, I find that more easy to do than with the people that we interact on a daily basis. In the sense that because we're so familiar with them, we sometimes don't see their advancement.
Yeah.
And in that sense, we can be offensive to them because of our familiarity. So do you have something to suggest to me how we can interact with that feeling that we may be offensive to our relatives?
Yeah, no, it's such a nice point. Yeah, I feel like the easiest people to be offensive to is perhaps one's spouse. We forget they're Vaishnavas sometimes, you know? And then just our closeness with one another, it's so easy to argue, fight, say names, maybe not show the respect to the person as a Vaishnava because the relationship is so close. Like I know that different servants of Srila Prabhupada had stated that Srila Prabhupada wouldn't keep the same secretary or servant throughout, you know, their whole time, Srila Prabhupada's whole time, or it would be in segments and they would rotate. And the reason is it's very easy to feel familiar when associating with the spiritual master in such an intimate way, in such a human way. And that's one example, but even just our friend circle and our sangha that way. I think just bringing it up and being aware of this is important. I think that I start to understand the advancement of my friends and those I'm familiar with when I'm not around them and I hear about them from other people. And then I think, oh, okay, maybe like this person is very advanced. You know, especially with boys, we have a tendency to show love by sort of playfully saying maybe mean things or rude things or taking the mick out of each other. It's just natural. Or to roast one another. It's just a way of showing love for one another. And it can be very easy to not do the other thing and to glorify one another. I feel as if with ladies, they tend to appreciate one another more easily, you know, like in conversation. With men, maybe not as much, and something I think just to work on. But yeah, when you hear about our peers, our friends, our sangha from other people, you start to get a good understanding of devotees. And part of community is to have times where devotees can be appreciated. Like birthdays, for example. You know, birthdays are common in society in general, and in the Vaishnava circle, if that's a day to appreciate devotees, that even though we might be so close with them, we don't appreciate them in this light. But on that day, it's very good to appreciate one another to help us realize, oh, we are with someone who's perhaps very advanced and may not realize it.
Very good advice. Appreciation. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Ram Govinda Prabhu, for such nice glorification about Lord Shiva. I was thinking that how our philosophy is so complete. You know, when I came to Krishna consciousness, I had no understanding about any of this, although I have some idea. But and then, at least in initially, I thought, okay, Lord Shiva is, you know, we don't worship him. You know, have that kind of incomplete understanding. But our philosophy is so amazing, and Bhagavatam tells us everything, Prabhupada tells us everything, how to actually see each personality and what is their position and how to appreciate them. And just like your class about being judgmental and thinking how we make so many judgments about the demigods and, you know, Lord Shiva, but such complete philosophy, so amazing, so scientific, you know, what is the position of each person, each personality, whether it's Brahma, Shiva, demigods, spiritual master, Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
So just appreciating, as you were talking about, how we're so fortunate that we can actually make progress in our own spiritual life by seeing everybody, you know, in the correct way. So thank you so much for your presentation this morning. It was very nice.
Thank you for that reflection. I'll just add that Because when we are curious, it's so healthy because all the answers are there. All the answers are there. If you're curious about any subject matter in Krishna conscious philosophy that doesn't seem to make sense, there is an answer, which is so wonderful. But if you place a judgment, you end any impetus for learning more, because you put your own preconceived notion that this is, if take the example of Lord Shiva, this is what Lord Shiva is like. I don't, you know, he's very strange, he's very different. This is not our line. We don't worship Lord Shiva, end of story. Then we don't create any desire to learn more, and that's, at the end of the day, our loss. So it's like you're saying, everything is available to us through the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's purports, that if we just remain curious, we can answer any question. Please.
Yeah, it just came another question in mind.
Please.
What about accepting prasadam from the demigods? I know we cannot put everyone on the same level, so what about that?
Yeah, I think this story is there to illustrate not that, one is that Lord Shiva is Mahadeva, he's not any demigod, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't accept his remnants because he is a demigod, but accepts it because he considers him the greatest Vaishnava, just as we would accept the remnants from Srila Prabhupada or a very advanced devotee. So I think that is the point being made by Mahaprabhu. But the process of taking prasadam and the intricacies of it is important to understand through Guru Parampara, that we offer through the spiritual master to the Lord, and then we take the prasadam, and therefore we are getting the Bhagavat Mahaprasadam and Mahaprasadam of the spiritual master as well. So I think in this case, it's not propounding, let's now take prasadam of all the demigods because they're all Vaishnavas, but rather stating the greatness of Lord Shiva through this example. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other questions, thoughts, or reflections? I see Dasharatha Sutta Prabhu's hand in the back.
Hare Krishna,
Prabhu.
Thank you for the very nice class.
Welcome.
There's two possible comments, so you get to pick one. One is some background information on the Sri Shivashtakam spoken by Lord Shiva in Murari Gupta's Sri Chaitanya Charita Mahakavyam. Mm-hmm. And the other is some background information on the Radha Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj spoken by Lord Shiva to Sri Radha.
Oh, okay.
So take your pick, Shivashtakam or Kripa Kataksha Stava.
Could I pick on the Shivashtakam just because it's so new and fresh to me, please?
Yes, as Srila Prabhupada taught us, and you can hear the recordings, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only wrote 8 verses. So we all know about Shikshashtakam. Mm. So what is now the Shivashtakam? It says is spoken by Lord Shiva. Mm. So this is in a category of ancient manuscripts called, at the end of the old handwritten manuscripts, there's a little statement at the end. In Sanskrit, they always put the title at the end. In English, we always put the title first. And then so at the end, the colophon says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Padma Mukh Odgata, which means these verses that we just listed are issued forth from the lotus mouth of Sri Mahaprabhu. So as we see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's dancing ecstatically in Rath Yatra, or he's talking with Ramananda Roy privately. So he's speaking many verses. So did he compose them, or is he reciting verses that were already extant? So here in Murari Gupta's Chaitanya Charita, we don't know, did he compose them? Was it already a stotra? So it's in the category of things that issued from his lotus mouth, but he didn't necessarily compose them. Murari Gupta has given us that little treasure there.
Wow, thank you for sharing. Yeah, I was thinking that also. I said, oh, because the translation, I said compose, and I was thinking, does this mean compose? Or because I know of the Shikshashtakam, but that's such a nice detail. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't really know, us little jivas. We don't know. He does so many mysterious things, and we can't judge. He wrote this, he didn't write that.
Right.
Unless one of the acharyas tell us, like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us, you know, if this was Mahaprabhu's writing.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, he says, he recited the verses of Jayadev Goswami, he recited the songs of Vidyapati, Chandidas. So the acharyas will tell us if he wrote it or not.
Yeah, thank you.
Hare
thank
Krishna.
You. Hare Krishna. Yeah, I was just going to say, if everyone is willing to stay, maybe we could hear the second comment about Sri Radha Krishna Bhakatash.
What, more? I don't want to hear my voice on this machine.
This is
unbearably gruesome.
Sorry about that, but it's very nice for us.
You quoted, Kada Karishyasi Hamam Kripa Kataksha Bhajanam. You know that slok? Munindra Vrindavandite Chiloka Shoka Harini Vasanna Paktra Vankaje Nikunja Bhuvilasini Vajanja Sun. How's it go?
Vajanja Sunya Sangate.
Vajanja Sunya Sangate Karakarishya Sihamam Kripa Kadaksha Bhajanam. So this is a prayer from one of the many Vaishnav tantras called the Rudra Yamala. It's a very deep and mysterious book, and there's a Radha Kripa Kataksha and a Krishna Kripa Kataksha, also composed in the same meter.
Uh-huh.
The meter is called Tunaka. It's Lagu and Guru. Lagu, light, and Guru, heavy syllables. So this, just the title, Radha Kripa Kataksha Stavaraj. Lord Shiva calls it the king of stavas, the king of prayers to Sri Radha. So what is he praying for? He's praying for the Kripa Kataksha. What is a Kataksha? Aksha is I, and Kataksha means diverted version I, which means Radha and Krishna are busy doing their leelas. And when Srila Prabhupada allows us to get near those leelas, we're just watching Radha and Krishna and their associates. But Lord Shiva here, he's praying for Radha, for that little split second to divert her eyes to you. And then you're suddenly hit with the direct vision of her pupils. And then what is she saying when she diverts her version? She's so busy with the Leela, busy with Astasakis, busy with so many things, but she takes that moment to look at you sideways. She's saying, I see you. I recognize you. I am glad that you're here with us. So that's what the Kataksha is. The sidelong glance of mercy. The Kripa Kataksha.
Because
when she hits you. And now look at us right here. We are even more fortunate than somebody who just gets back to Goloka Leela. Because look, they're looking at us the whole time. We don't have to wait for that little sidelong glance. They're standing here so mercifully. So we cannot even calculate the mercy we have in this room. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for that. We'll end there. Hare Krishna Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.